we support groups for up to 10 years. And to be honest, when we get to 10 years, I think we'll think again about, should we stop even now after 10 years? Because a lot of these challenges take a really long time to overcome. And also we live in such a dynamic world. We've got elections happening in India, elections happening across the world. So community groups can start creating change and then all of a sudden something happens, whether it's politically or environmentally or socially, and that kind of pushes them off track. So how do we support them, just like we'd support a business in becoming more resilient? And I think I'll stop there, Gaurav.
So this is how it started. I entered lately, some 30, 40 years back, I started giving, myself and my wife started giving 5 days a month. And for the last 20 years, we are full-time into it. And the trust has expanded in many ways. I started with curative work, we started preventive work and various projects like TB control program or eye care, de-addiction, microcredit, on a very large scale. The trust has a staff of 650 people, and this is how it I entered, and it's going on like this.
Hello and welcome to a very special podcast series, Unusual Suspects. I'm your host, Gaurav Chaudhary. This is a series about unraveling stories of entrepreneurs, investors, and businesses and professionals, and of course, philanthropists, who are disruptors, yet not in your face. Their disruptions have consistently delivered on the purpose and the mission they've embarked on. Their values are as strong as the mission. Unusual Suspects streams on earshot.in, Spotify.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, moneycontrol.com, and a host of other podcast streaming platforms. In this special episode, Catalyzing Change, the Power of Family Philanthropy, as part of Unusual Suspects, in collaboration with Giving Pi, India's first family-focused philanthropy network, we'd be talking about the rapidly evolving philanthropic landscape and the paradigm shift that is underway. Philanthropists are increasingly leveraging technology, engaging in collaborative efforts, exploring innovative financial models, and placing a strong emphasis on equity and inclusion in the giving strategies. Together with families and philanthropists, we explore diverse giving approaches and evolving perspectives, aiming to inspire a new era of impactful philanthropy, especially in critical and underserved sectors. In this episode, we shift our focus to India's underfunded communities. We'll explore the transformative potential of philanthropy in bridging the gap and empowering these often forgotten and sidelined communities. I'm delighted to have Sonal Sachdev Patel, the CEO of God My Silent Partner Foundation, GMSP, a family foundation established by her parents. The foundation supports frontline organizations working to improve the lives of marginalized people in India. I'm also delighted to have Ashok Bhansali, a founder trustee of the Bhansali Trust. The Bhansali Trust was established in 1969 by the Bhansali family. Ashok's areas of giving and interest include education, health, mental health care, eye care, microcredit, income generation, and disaster relief and de-addiction, particularly in rural areas. Delighted to have you, Sonal and Ashok.
Thank you.
Sonal, first to you, could you share how your giving journey began and how has it evolved over the years? What motivated you to focus on philanthropy, on supporting historically marginalized communities? Sonal?
Hi, Gaurav. Thanks for having me. Yeah, sure. So our foundation was started by my parents, Ramesh and Pratibha Sachdev, in 2006. And I'll start by telling you a little bit about their story. And the reason I'm doing that is because I think that every family's story shapes how their philanthropy evolves and how they see the world. So we're of Gujarati origin, but my parents were both born in East Africa. My father is one of 13 brothers and sisters, and he was the first of his family to come to the UK. It was that basic economic migration story for want of a better life. And he grew up in, I suppose, relative poverty, although he always says that even though they were poor in money, they were rich in love. And he came to the UK to basically earn a better life for his family. And he was very hardworking and fortunate to build up wealth, mainly in the nursing home in a property business. And that's how our philanthropy journey started. And he did that actually with my mother. Often it's the women who are unrecognized in these stories, but my mum was involved in building up the business as well. And your question about why did we support historically marginalized communities? I think a lot of philanthropists come to the sector thinking that we want to help, in inverted commas, the needy. And it starts off in that really simple way of let's help people who are less fortunate than ourselves. And of course, that's a really kind of good thought. But I think what's happened with us is that we've evolved and realized that issues run a lot deeper than just there being needy people in society, and that there are systemic causes for why some groups are marginalized or excluded from mainstream society. And so whilst we started our philanthropy really covering the basic needs, we've moved into looking much more at human rights, justice. Why are certain groups always pushed to the edge of society? Why are they always marginalized? And what can we do, not just to kind of put a plaster over it, but to actually change society going forward so that we see a different future for our children?
You know, Ashok, turning to you, could you please share with us how your philanthropic journey has evolved over the years at the Bhansali Trust? What's inspired you to focus your philanthropy on supporting tribals and marginalized communities in socioeconomically disadvantaged regions of India? Ashok?
We belong, I'm a diamond merchant from a diamond merchant family. And our family many years back was a really poor family of seven brothers, three sisters. I come among the last siblings. And my eldest brother from a small village, he came to Mumbai to earn something. And though the family was struggling, the first income he made, he decided that 20% of his income throughout his life, minimum 20% will go to the less fortunate. How it started, that was some 65 years back. And then the business was expanding. My another brother joined for the trust work, and he decided to remain single. He's Mr. Mahesh Bhansali, the eldest brother, Dinesh Bhansali. This brother is an engineer. He did his B electrical mechanical from VJTI Mumbai. And then to serve the community, he decided not to get married and remain single to work for the underprivileged communities. He went to the villages at the age of 28. And still he's working at age of 82. So this is how it started. I entered lately, some 30, 40 years back, I started giving myself and my wife, started giving 5 days a month. And for the last 20 years, we are full-time into it. And the trust has expanded in many ways. Started with curative work. We started preventive work and various projects like TB control program or eye care, de-addiction, microcredit, on a very large scale. The trust has a staff of 650 people, and this is how I entered, and it's going on like this.
Absolutely. Great to hear about that. Sonal, your family has been engaged in giving for more than a decade, and what have been some of the challenges that you have faced in giving to historically marginalized communities in India? Have there been any shifts in your perspective, or has there been any aha moments as you have navigated through these challenges, Sonal?
Yes, for sure. But first, I just have to say to Ashokji, what an inspiration he is, because I think the generation that actually make money and are able to give it away, and not only just give money, but give time, that's really inspiring for me, because, you know, I didn't make the money. It was my parents' generation. So to listen to you tell your story, that you're not just giving your time, but your money and the sacrifice of you and your wife and your brother, it's just such a wonderful thing. And I'm so grateful and happy to be on this podcast with you. But Gaurav, coming back to your question, I think the challenges have been in giving to historically marginalized communities have been that it's often difficult to see impact. So a lot of these changes take a long time. And whilst, of course, there is impact that happens, it may not be that visible, like, say, serving 500 meals or something. And so one has to be patient. But also, I think the most difficult thing has been the mindset shift of what does impact look like? So is impact serving 500 meals, for example, or is it the empowerment of marginalized groups? So say tribal women having a voice, or Dalit communities being able to vote, or even being recognized. So, I mean, that's been one of the challenges. The other challenge, particularly in India, is accessing these marginalized groups. So I remember when COVID happened, Jan Sahas, who's one of the brilliant NGOs that GMSP partners with, they did a survey, and they surveyed over 3,000 migrant construction workers in northern and central India. And they found that 94% of them didn't have building and other construction worker identity cards. So that ruled out their access of their ability to access government support. And so just finding these groups of people and knowing the right way to access them and a respectful way to access them, ensuring that they have a voice in the changes that they want to see in their society, has been something that has proved a challenge. But I think the way that we've overcome that is by partnering with community groups. And that, I think, is the aha moment that really we are not the right people to be making decisions about how the funding should be spent, and that we live a very different life from these marginalized groups, and that they know the answer, and respecting them and giving them the dignity to give them the funds and devolve the power of deciding where the money goes, and let them decide how and where the money should be spent, and also to support them long term and unrestricted. So if we really trust the groups that we're supporting, then why is it that we stop funding them after 3 years? Is it that we think that their problems are solved? No. And so we are, we support groups for up to 10 years. And to be honest, when we get to 10 years, I think we'll think again about, should we stop even now after 10 years? Because a lot of these challenges take a really long time to overcome. And also, we live in such a dynamic world. We've got elections happening in India, elections happening across the world. So community groups can start creating change, and then all of a sudden something happens, whether it's politically or environmentally or socially, and that kind of pushes them off track. So how do we support them, just like we'd support a business in becoming more resilient? And I think I'll stop there, Gaurav.
Absolutely. And what a wonderful exposition of the challenges that you have navigated, and are very wonderfully articulated of the aha moments, particularly when you said that the marginalized communities actually lead a far different life from than we do. So it's very difficult for us to even imagine those. Ashok, coming to you, you know, there's growing interest among funders in supporting niche causes and underfunded communities, and this is growing in India as we speak. In your experience, what are the opportunities or the needs in socioeconomically disadvantaged regions of India where philanthropists can focus on? Also, what advice would you share with those wanting to begin to give to underfunded communities in India? Ashok?
Thank you, Gaurav, and thank you, Sonal, for your kind words. See, with my experience, I can say that if someone wants to start the work, should start in a small way, like a business, get into the details, try to understand the problems, the ground realities, meet the people, spend some time at field. We call it field means in the villages where you want to work, and try to talk to them and try to understand. So they will be also more confident. And then I believe that India is a complex country, and very complex problems. But if you think properly, try to understand the problem, you can always find, in most of the cases, you can find simple, practical, and economical solutions, which is not possible just by sitting in a big city and looking at the reports. You have to go to the field and understand the problem. This is one thing. And then as you succeed, try to expand it, double it, four times. And there is no limit. if you are doing well, it will grow like a big industrialist. It can grow, and the funds will come if the work is good. There won't be any shortage of funds. I think in a country like India now, there is so much fund available. The project should be proper and genuine.
Absolutely right, Ashok. The final question to both of you. First to Sonal, of course, and then the same question to Ashok. As India approaches its 100th year and 2047, 100th year of independence, 2047 is a milestone year. It's crucial to examine how philanthropy can empower marginalized and underfunded communities. This is particularly important considering the critical role of philanthropy in India's social development. What, according to you, can philanthropy do differently to invest more to support historically marginalized communities in India? What are some of the innovative pathways or strategies that, you know, givers like you or, you know, those who want to get into becoming, get into serious philanthropy, institutionalized or individual, particularly families, to build India where no one is left behind? What are the kind of things that we need to do? Sonal, first to you and then to Ashok.
Thanks, Gaurav. I mean, I'll go into the detail, but if people who are listening to this take one thing away, then it's to say give more, give faster, and give better. And I think philanthropists often really hesitate. They're waiting for the perfect thing. They're really unsure about what to give to, how to give to. And I'm not, of course, saying to be reckless. Of course, we have to be really thoughtful and careful. But I think often philanthropists hold back when they don't need to. And we really are in a critical time now. There are great needs across India and across the world. So I think we can really look internally and think, what's holding me back? And also remember the freedom that philanthropists have. Someone recently gave me a multiple choice question, and they were like, if you had £10 million or how many crore rupees, would you rather be the leader of a corporate, the CEO of a corporate, say, an NGO leader, a government minister, or a philanthropist? And of course, the answer, although whilst all of those people have power in their positions, they also have a number of restrictions. Whereas philanthropists, whilst we're not accountable, and there's, you know, many issues that go along with that, we also have freedom to act really quickly and to fund things that other people won't fund. So I think that's one thing, is to really remind ourselves we've got this amazing opportunity to do things that are innovative and different, and we should go and do those things. Having said that, I think funders often really love the idea of funding some shiny new thing. You know, I'm going to fund that one thing that's going to really change the world. And this, the whole discussion around tech and AI feels like maybe there's a silver bullet that's just going to eradicate problems for everyone. And my thought to that is that sometimes funding the sort of seemingly, I hate to use the word boring, but just the grassroots community-led work, the convenings, the support happening on the ground, that's the thing that we have to back, and we have to stop doing it for a little while and then deciding, maybe I'm going to do something else, or maybe I'm going to re-strategize. But stick with those community groups, have faith in them, back them, help to build their resilience. I mean, we saw in COVID across the world how few NGOs had reserves. They're not able to fund, to survive beyond the immediate, because they're living hand to mouth. And they're living hand to mouth because we funders put them in that position, and we don't allow them to build their resilience, build their well-being. So few funders fund well-being. But imagine the trauma of doing this work day in and day out. Of course we should be funding well-being. And of course we should say to our partners, we're going to fund you for the next 5 years. You don't have to come back to us every single year asking for more money. And again, of course, there should be milestones that are met. And I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination that organizations shouldn't have impact, but it should be a collaborative approach and it should be a partnership. And if I echo what Ashok G said, is if the funder goes into the field, understands what the issues are, then of course they're going to be in partnership with the organizations that are doing the work, because they understand what is the NGO actually doing. But when you sit in your office and you read reports, as Ashok G was saying, you don't really understand the problem. And that's where you get dissatisfied. And then the issue, I think, is much more with the funder and not with the NGO that's doing the work. And the other thing I would say to philanthropists, particularly philanthropists in India, who often have really large businesses that they're running alongside their philanthropy, is take that same lens and apply it across your whole portfolio. So, you know, what do your supply chains look like? How are marginalized groups being impacted there? What are the conditions for workers? What is your pay like? And again, using the example of COVID, I think we saw that across the world. Many of the people that were doing really essential work in all of our lives, whether they be domestic helpers or bus drivers or supermarket workers, they're the most underpaid and unrecognized in our community. And yet they're the people that keep our society going. So, you know, just looking beyond just like, oh, this is my philanthropy hat. How can I use these same values that I apply to my philanthropy across everything I'm doing, whether it be the business that I'm running or generally the life that I'm living, the people that I'm interacting with in my daily life? How can I use my philanthropy to unlock those sides of my giving and the impact that I have on the world just through my existence?
Absolutely, Sonal. Ashok, what are your views on this?
Gaurav, see, we know that India is prosperous in last few years, or we hear the word India signing, but that is not for all. In such a big country, there are millions, certain section of the society, and the number is millions, those who are not much have changed for them. They live the same condition, in the same condition. And you won't believe the poverty level in certain area today even. I feel sorry to say that a family of 5-6 using the same towel. Not that. Same toothbrush everyone uses. This is no zero education, zero hygiene, zero healthcare in certain communities. Like I give you an example, there is a community called Musar in Bihar. Musar, the mus means rat. These are the rat eater communities. Now, nothing has changed for them in 7 decades. We started working with them and came to know that they have deliberately, they have been kept like this. The politicians were interested in their vote bank. They wanted to keep them illiterate and poor forever. And the landlords, they wanted to have cheap labor intact for them. So then nothing happened. And I think these are the nice people of our country. They use minimum resources. They are most harmless people and a partner of our country. Still, they live these lives. So I think those people should focus on this also. It will be not easy because to working with it will be a big challenge to work with such people. But see, in our case, we have deliberately decided to work in the most challenging and difficult area. The reason being, very few NGOs are interested to work there. So the maximum need is there and minimum NGOs are there. So we took a decision long back, say 50 years back. So wherever we work, we select the most challenging and poor and needy area of that. And for years, we have learned how to work in this area and to hire the local staff. See, Gaurav, the fund is very important, but that comes secondary in my opinion. Good staff, local staff, their training, knowledge of the ground reality, and other things are more important. And you work hard, stay with people, success will come. There are instances where we don't succeed, but it's part of it, I understand. But in such a big country, there are so many cluster of villages. And cluster, this is not cluster of 5-10 villages. Say, what I said about Musar, their population is 5 million, living in 12,000 villages. We have so far reached 800 villages. But to reach 10,000 villages, and you work a little harder, you can make good changes in 2-3 years, which didn't happen in 70 years. So I think this way we can slowly do something better, and empowering women is the key, I think.
to talk about the power that funders have to change themselves. So that, of course, we need to look out and see what changes can we make on the ground, but also where are we the limiting factor? And Ashokji talked so beautifully and so eloquently about how he feels for these other communities. And one of the guiding principles in our foundation is this idea of spiritual solidarity, that we're all from the same source, that we're kind of pieces from the same light. So whether we're born in the UK or we're born in India, whether we're born into this rat eating community or another community, essentially we're all the same. And so that we have a responsibility to help those marginalized communities in the same way that we would want them to help us. And also, I think when you become a mother, and that was a real aha moment for me, I realized that as a mother, you care so deeply for your children, and you want so much for them to be successful and for them to be safe. And every mother wants that, regardless of what your income level is or what caste you are. It's such a unifying force, motherhood. And I think as philanthropists, if we think in those universal, unifying terms, it's much easier to give away our power and really support marginalized communities.
Absolutely. So well said. Thank you, Sonal Sachdev Patel and Ashok Bhansali, for taking the time out and dropping by to have this conversation with us and sharing your deep insights and perspective on the transformative potential of philanthropy in bridging the gap and empowering marginalized communities, which were often forgotten and sidelined. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.